mwenjeleri mwashakati umtu wali eno henda terifiro nkwa umu kwe harongo mwokoka no inarika garukiro ya kute na anona okunangika anona yaza po mnongo na yari na yatatu ngesho tatuko pingi epianje noro kumbora kumbora kwa nka uwanga oli yari epiene ni chafoka fara ngesho tatuko pingi kamuniki na ndomona umu ngesho wanditire kuchafu na tuka nanyi hatu humbora sister zetu opuike otoka ningo matigirero toka kwa njo matigirero nana na noko na hanumbina ya kupamba mara shawasi hanumbina ya kupamba nembano itayatarawe uruvarowe nde na hanumbina waninga na unonambe
tuku bitendengi
kukumamono opun atu dipaza sana pambepo na ndoka pushiparutu ndere okwa tu itura kumweli yari moragana mono suope fimuno etungwe nene moshifo
na kandiri popi kuchukua ya shangwa shiki ae nga ndiri peta mikomfio ndeni dimbura kuchujeta popi
ok ndia tungo jino yoye kwa lieno hauto ya ford hatu ya forda tungo jino shila sikama kukumbanda ya forda ya ankira ndia ankira nguu akakusapu atikinga over asuka sila achamuka dekibuka kaya kwa katuliko sinita ndope na ndiri kreis anu inuva na ndundu mwume taka njokono nisa mnu inimbambi ya changwa moka mbomu so suti yao chike ngashinke ya simbo nzati kene vuro miyo ngombali na chani kupandia ya nandishu uni nene na ambi kutia unene ne keshike umwe unkunu uwe kwa lukanona efike mausi efike mausi ke shikuwa nandoku za pebra
anagashifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito mwa iwe yongeshefa yoyo kupikira mo Eagle FM Media House Ngwe tuende kuimemeha uu kakombanga nina Kara omkwashipareki uimopo yomo programa detu Moambo lengira selma konara heta tuimu Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oni aji Eagle FM
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is.
All right, the time is 2 minutes either after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. A very, very good morning to you, all the listeners of Eagle FM, wherever you're tuning in from, whether it's through our website or perhaps maybe the app. We truly appreciate you choosing us every day. I'm your host, Loisa Shemi, and of course I'll be with you until the very same hour, that is 7:30, just to give you the usual update on the economic entrepreneurship trade policy that what we give you until the half 7:30. But before I do that, please do not forget to connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, just for the daily news update and of course the newspaper alerts. And today the newspaper is out. Please do not forget to rather subscribe and get the newspaper, or rather send through your details to 081-241-44. That's the number you can send through your details, just to get the newspaper every day when it's out. That is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Please do not also forget to save that number so that you can able to get the newspaper. And please don't forget to download our app, Eagle FM app, that's available on Google Play Store and the App Store, just to stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are, whether you are abroad, you can able to tune in from the app. And downloading it is it's a good thing, because I mean you can be also able to rather listen to all the podcasts of past shows. They are lined up for you just to go listen, or rather to listen. Yeah, and to start off with internationally in Zambia, so with international news in Zambia, is that Zambia Railways Limited has projected to generate about $30 million United States dollars this year from transporting various goods on its rail line. So now the company managing director says the firm can even do more working in partnership with the private sector. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Rail line. This is just an example of the level of encroachment on Zambia Railways infrastructure. And that is not the only problem. Vandalism is also rampant. The Parliamentary Committee on Transport, Works and Supply was in Kitwe and Chambishi to appreciate the challenges facing Zambia Railways Limited.
The country is looking at increasing production of copper from the 800,000 metric tons to 3 million metric tons per annum. And now we can only move that copper after production if we have the necessary and the required infrastructure in place. And Zambia Railways is one of the major players that is going to play a very, very important role on that aspect.
Zambia Railways to be revamped. It's important when we are talking of growing the economy that we don't just look at the road infrastructure, but also the rail infrastructure.
Despite the challenges, management is focused on turning around the company.
But there is tremendous opportunity. Where we are now, this is an example of how private sector can work with government. This year, we're projecting about $30 million U.S. dollars. Let me use U.S. dollars, that's the language our friends understand. About 70% of that is coal. But for us, the potential... And when I say potential, I'm talking about orders on the table. We can do up to $85 million.
The committee also visited Sunline, its strategic partner of Zambia Railways Limited.
Yes, Zambia Railways in this partnership, so to speak, only two fronts. One, using the rail wagons to transport our goods here. And secondly, also we are renting their place here, this land where we are.
The parliamentarians want to see the company recapitalized and stiffer penalties against vandals and encroachers.
We've just been told that there is a lot of vandalism in terms of fish plates and some of these things that people are taking the scrap dealers, which is very, very unfortunate.
Such as encroachment and, of course, the dilapidated rail infrastructure that is on the ground. We have come to see for ourselves so that we can do a report, and this report can be directed to the executive to recapitalize Zambia Railways.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Agriculture Minister, John Steyn Huisen of South Africa, of course, spoke about some engagements the South African delegation have had with some of the U.S. counterparts ahead of President Cyril Ramaphosa meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump. We might take a listen to this particular update.
And what wanting to rebalance some of the trade, and obviously from our side wanting to retain market access but not with a 30% tariff. And so that was the discussion yesterday. We'll obviously be briefing the president today on the outcome of that meeting, what they put on the table, and some solutions on the way forward. But certainly I think it was a constructive meeting, and our key goal here is to keep the doors open with the United States of America to ensure that we have good ongoing bilateral arrangements, and where we do have issues on phytosanitary and animal health, that we have open channels to be able to deal with them as quickly and expeditiously as possible so that we keep the mutual trade going.
Minister, at any stage during that particular meeting, did the issue of land expropriation or the Expropriation Act come up, and what's happening to South African farmers, which has been the predominant narrative of the U.S., the White House at least, but at an official to official level, did that come up?
No, it didn't come up at all. It was a focus yesterday was on trade and how we can keep trade going. I've no doubt the matter will come up in the course of the period. And we must be honest, we have a rural safety problem, and it affects rural communities incredibly harshly because of poor police resources in rural areas, and of course the difficulties associated with policing in large areas. And that's why, you know, I think what we should be doing is looking for partnerships with other countries about how we can improve, using technology and other means, rural safety. Farmers and farm workers do feel unsafe and insecure in many parts of rural areas, but it's no different to challenges faced in rural areas around other parts of the world. And what we need to do is to make sure that we focus policing resources there, and that we have a far better synergy between local security initiatives by farmers and farming organizations and formal SAPS interventions in those rural areas.
I mean, undoubtedly, the land question in South Africa is quite complex. It's got racial undertones. There's also issues of legislation and Section 25, and there's also issues of farm workers vis-a-vis farm owners. And you've recently made remarks at the NAMPRA Agriculture Festival. Some have really pushed back at you. Now, you're also the leader of the DA, the second biggest partner in the government of national unity. And I know you don't like to talk about race, but how important is it going to be you for a white man in the agriculture portfolio communicating to the Trump administration that believes that white Afrikaners are being persecuted and white farmers are being persecuted? Do you think, in a way, you are going to be able to bolster Team South Africa's messaging?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I regard myself as the Minister of Agriculture, not the White Minister of Agriculture. And I think we should start seeing people as judging them on their character, not on the as envoys of their race. However, I mean, I think we do recognize that in South Africa, we've got to address imbalances in land ownership. And the way we do that has to be responsible and ensure that it doesn't affect food security and doesn't affect the property rights. That's why Section 25 of the Constitution is intact. You would know as well that the matter of expropriation without compensation is currently before the courts of South Africa. As any judicial review of any process of government anywhere in the world would take place. And we obviously look forward to the court clarifying that. As you know, I'm very firmly of the view that compensation has to be fair and equitable, as Section 25 of the Constitution says. And I reiterate, Section 25 of the Constitution remains intact. I don't regard mill compensation as a fair and balanced way of being able to do compensation. But I think that, you know, we will get clarity from the court, and we will then be able to ensure that we have an expropriation act that speaks to the Constitution. But I come back to the point, we have to address imbalances in land ownership, but we must do it in a responsible way and in a way that ensures that we don't harm the economic future of the country, and that we don't jeopardize food security in the country.
Right, the time is 12 minutes in the half, 6 o'clock. There's early morning scoop. We are on the international segment. We might take a listen to the next item whereby Zimbabwean's Parliament Speaker Jacob Mundenda says legislative exchanges with China will be now strengthened to provide legal support for deeper bilateral cooperation. We might take a listen.
Our excellent fraternal relations between the two countries is our independence. So that is the anchor of our fraternal relations, which are excellent at the moment. A number of projects have been undertaken by the Chinese in Zimbabwe for the construction of the new parliament building. It's a magnificent building, very, very salubrious in terms of architectural design, and it does capture our cultural heritage as symbolized by our great Zimbabwe ruins, from which we get the name of our country, Zimbabwe. It's now functional, and I've been pleased to be the first speaker to preside over that new parliament, and China were excellent. Outstanding projects and investments include the recent one in the past 3 years. It specializes in steel mining and fabrication. And as it grows, it should have a maximum of not less than 20,000 employees. both at the plant and downstream.
In the context of implementing the outcomes of the FOCAC Beijing Summit, as well as advancing high-quality cooperation under the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative, so in what areas do you expect to see the two countries to further deepen their cooperation and collaboration?
President Xi Jinping and our President, Dr. Edi Mnangagwa, have agreed on the five-star ironclad socio-economic development framework, which has upscaled our relationship from strategic cooperation to this higher level. And it is our hope that in the fields of security, economy, political relationship, etc., we are going to be seen to be moving together at that higher plane. It is therefore important that we strengthen our bilateral relations at parliamentary level, because protocols that have been signed and are not ratified by the respective parliaments, they are of no force and effect at all. We are going to establish a Zimbabwe-China Parliamentary Friendship Association, which will buttress the efforts of the executive in establishing excellent bilateral relations between the two republics. You are going to see more and more of parliamentary delegations coming out here specifically to look at various sectors of your economy, as well as studying the political economy of.
Right, there you have the time in 16 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock in this early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the seed taxes could be adjusted above inflation rate. We might take a lesson.
Of the budget, and particularly the sin taxes, just the expectation around this is liquor traders who are now, we're now joined by National Liquor Traders Council convener Lucky Ntimana. Good evening, Lucky. Thank you very much for joining us on the program. Now, we just wrapped up an interview with an economist, Dr. Sanele Kumete, who stated that sin taxes remain the low-hanging fruit, which obviously has an impact on your sector. Just take us through some of your expectations for tomorrow's budget.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. We really do not expect that we will get more than what you saw in the budget 2.0, which was excise plus about 2% inflation, which takes the number to run about 6.7%, give or take. So we are excited that, you know, the issue of budget has been taken off the table, because for us that was a burning issue, because it was going to make it very difficult for our consumers and our patrons to actually access illegal alcohol. As we have seen, the proliferation of illicit and illegal alcohol in our country, which now amounts to over 20 billion rand. So we are comfortable with the budget that is going to be presented tomorrow, because we know that there won't be any changes with regards to excise. And we do understand that, you know, the alcohol industry seems to be a low-hanging fruit for any government that wants, you know, to increase their revenue. But we also need to caution that, you know, a 1 percentage point increase in excise can only give government 100 million rand, which is not significant, but also it is big enough to actually destroy the legal environment of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And then beyond this, there's a conversation around just stimulating the economy, that there needs to be a shift now here where there's more spend on infrastructure and ensuring that there's greater employment in the country, given the stats right now. Your views on just that, the focus on stimulating the economy, how do you believe the finance minister should go about doing that?
I think, let me maybe respond in the context of the alcohol industry, more specifically the tavern sector, which employs over 250,000 people in a township space. Taverners continue to play an important role in reigniting the township economy, as it were. As we know that, you know, the biggest employers of black-owned businesses in the township space remains the taxi industry and the alcohol industry. So we are playing our part in ensuring that we support, you know, the employment in our country. We've seen the numbers, the rising of the unemployment, but the liquor industry certainly remains the steadfast ensure that we support the jobs that were created, but also support the government's call to invest more, you know, in infrastructure development, because without infrastructure, it is very difficult for our economy to carry any possibilities of, you know, an increase, and ensure that we're able to absorb the jobs that are much needed to actually turbocharge our economy. So we are in support of government's approach. We are in support of, you know, the way in which the Minister of Finance has actually engaged with the liquor industry in ensuring that we formulate a budget that is healthy for the industry, but the budget that is pro the tavern space, in ensuring that we are able to continue trading, we are able to run our business in a way that's sustainable, but in a way that is also going to ensure that we make a bit of profit to be able to put food on our table.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly you sound quite upbeat, so I'm sure that whatever is tabled tomorrow, we must certainly make the liquor traders quite happy. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's National Liquor Trade.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, the small and medium businesses in Limpopo are anticipating Finance Minister Ernest Godawana a third budget speech for this year. Now, a group presenting small businesses at the Forum of Limpopo Entrepreneurs wants the minister's budget to outline a clear plan to accelerate infrastructure development. Now, the forum says the majority of infrastructure projects encounter delays in payment from the provincial government, further slowing down projects meant to create job opportunities in the community. We might take a lesson.
Bobo are hopeful that a sizable percentage of Godongwana's budget will be directed towards infrastructure development. Some construction companies say while they are satisfied with a separate infrastructure budget of 21 billion rand in the 2025 medium-term expenditure framework, construction projects in the province move at a slower pace. Some of them are urging the minister to increase the allocation to bulk water projects and road construction.
Specifically to me as a contractor, I would like to the minister to touch on the infrastructure. Roads and water. Yes, that's where we are. And the reason being, if we can increase more budget on the infrastructure, there will be more job creations when the contractors are busy working on those building of those infrastructure.
Small, medium and micro businesses are optimistic that the budget will focus on empowering young people. Youth-owned businesses also lament delayed payments. There was underspending of 122 million rand of some conditional grants during the past financial year. Some of the businesses believe that the funds can be directed towards the payment of struggling SMEs.
I would expect the minister to focus on job creation and incubation for new startup business and new ventures. As you can see, we are struggling with jobs as the youth and unemployment.
You struggle to pay your employees, suppliers, rent issues, transportation costs, and all the likes. So it's a bit of a challenge with getting to employ more people.
The Forum of Limpopo Entrepreneurs says its member affiliates rely on government tenders. It also says delayed payments and alleged corruption are the main challenges members encounter. The forum also wants Godongwana to set aside a budget for large-scale projects.
That one is another huge problem that is engulfing most of the contractors. Some who seem to be looking at them with unfinished project. And then if you go deeper into what are the problems they entail, it's quite huge. The only one single problem that always make them fail is late payment.
Limpopo Premier Dr. Popi Ramatuba says some of the companies that are contracted to government must also be held accountable for incomplete projects. She says they want to improve the screening of qualifications of potential contractors during the procurement phase.
The focus would be this time around on the public sector infrastructure. We need our implementing agency, your DBSA, your IDT and all that, but also the big role players, and equally the very same SMMEs who are complaining that we take forever to pay them, but they also need to come. We are also saying we need the profession itself. By profession, I mean the statutory body that regulates the built-in environment. Because we are seriously having a serious challenge where the mere fact that bridges are being constructed and they collapse within a short space of time. For me, before you can even start to blame any politician, start by blaming the very same profession.
Ramathuba says plans are underway for a provincial infrastructure summit to address issues in the construction industry.
All right, there you have it. The next item is that a new government initiative backed by the World Bank is empowering Ugandan women, enabling their small-scale venues to not only survive but flourish. Now, the program provides financing, thereby allowing the ventures to expand. We will take a listen.
Small-scale ventures, and more often than not, a lack of access to credit, transport and markets are key bottlenecks. However, a government-backed initiative supported by the World Bank is now helping many of them not just survive, but also scale beyond the usual median. CGTN's Michael Baleke has the details.
Grace Nanyonga knows the challenges of being a woman in business. For more than 15 years, she has smoked, seasoned and sold fish. But like many Ugandan women, obtaining funds to expand has been nearly impossible.
The government puts policies that support us, just that they end up in few hands, in particular hands. They look at your face, whether you need it or not, and maybe the bureaucracy in implementation of those policies. Oh, here, sign, they are Guansi parish chief. For us in business, we don't need to waste all that time. Time is money.
That's where the GROW project comes in. Launched by the World Bank and the government of Uganda, it offers training, infrastructure, and low-interest loans to help women scale up.
The line of credit is so unique. It is the first line of credit we've had for women in this country for this particular category, a category of small businesses that are trying to micro small businesses that are trying to become either micro to small or small to medium. And so far, the GROW loan is the lowest on the market. We give 10% interest rate per year.
So far, over 5,000 women have benefited from the program and more than $17 million have been disbursed. Beth Mwebaze used the loan to complete a stalled school classroom block.
I couldn't, of course, get money to finish it. My savings were very little. But after getting GROW money, it is now shining.
The major challenge that I've been facing was actually transport. I'm in Gulu City. I have to do hires from Kampala. So you're negotiating with a client. When you attach in that extra fee for transportation, it becomes a problem. They fall off. So with the GROW money, I managed to secure myself 380 pieces of chairs.
It's really very good to run your own business because it helps you to support the family. Yes. Via education, via medical care.
But challenges remain. The private sector foundation, which runs the GROW, says rural women are still left out and scaling up support will be key.
Uganda's GROW project may be small and local, but the impact goes beyond borders. As African countries look to GROW and recover, supporting women at the grassroots could be one of the smartest moves for the economy.
Economic experts believe the GROW model could be adapted across sub-Saharan Africa with adjustments for local needs.
First, finding out how are women entrepreneurs operating in their specific environments and then making slight adjustments according to those nuances. So both the social-cultural differences that might be happening in different countries, but also maybe the different sectors that are interesting in different countries and how the different women businesses are operating. So if we're able to make those slight adjustments across geographies, the basic premise is definitely something that you can replicate.
From fish.
All right, there you have it. The time is 28 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, and once we return, we'll take you through the local news update, looking at the economic news update, the trade, the entrepreneurship, that's what we are giving you from that hour of us, from from 7 actually, I mean from 6:30 o'clock until the hour of 7:30. Do not go away.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye. The structures...
Omutiha with the Kirotoguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafatana, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shimikimoshiwana, E. Moyao, or Tangongotisamil.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now. But I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm all right, the time is 31 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. Welcome back. This Early Morning Scoop. This is a show where we give you the trade, the policies. We're looking about the policy, we're looking about the entrepreneurship until the hour of 7:30. Now, to start off here with one of the lead story in our today's edition, please do not forget to ask for the newspaper, to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, or rather, Please do send through your detail to 081-241-44. There's a number you can save and so that you can able to get the newspaper. And of course, or rather you can just subscribe simply to our WhatsApp channel, Eagle FM Media House. Then you can able to get the newspaper, the news update that we give, rather you will share on our channel. You can able to, get through the channel. So now to start off here is over the past 5 years, Namibia has spent approximately $328.2 million importing various plant species from around 32 countries, according to data compiled by the Namibian Statistics Agency. Now, the data indicates the potential for local entrepreneurs and investors to venture into plant production for the domestic and export market. Now, the country has important trees, shrubs, and bushes, both grafted and non-grafted, that bear edible fruits or nuts. Now, those patterns point to a significant opportunity for Namibia to become a supplier of climate-resilient plant species, particularly in regions facing water scarcity. Now, South Africa continues to dominate Namibia's plant trade, supplying about 80% of total import over the 5 years period. Now, other countries, however, are gradually increasing their market share. Namibia has spent $78.6 million specifically on fruit-bearing plant over the past 5 years. Now, import from Mediterranean market, particularly for fruit trees, appear to be driven by the climate adaptation needs, as those species are suited to semi-arid conditions. Now, Namibians' own indigenous species, naturally adapted to arid climates, are gaining attention globally for their potential in a region grappling with water shortages and rising temperatures. However, as a horticultural trade expands, it also raises environmental concerns. Now, increased export must be managed with sustainable harvesting practices to safeguard the country's unique biodiversity. Now, every plant import in Namibia is subject to regulatory oversight. Now, authorities have tightened controls in response to a rise in plant smuggling, aiming to prevent the over-exploitation of slow-growing native species and to protect genetic diversity. Now, analysts have suggested that Namibia could benefit from introducing a certification schemes for sustainably sourced plant, which would enhance the country's market appeal while ensuring ecological integrity. Now, some reductions in import, particularly of bulbs, may signal a growing domestic production capacity. Nevertheless, Namibia still depends on foreign sources for certain higher value and specialized plant variety, such as ornamental plants. Now, the global surge in demand for drought-resistant and climate-resilient flawless presents a valuable economic opportunity for Namibia. Now, tapping into this potential will require concerted effort to overcome infrastructure limitations, adapt sustainable harvesting protocols, and invest in value-added processing. Now, experts believe that a strategic partnership with a research institution can help Namibia sustainably leverage its rich botanical resources. Now, the development of specialized nurseries and propagation facilities would also boost the quality and volume of plant exports. Now, as climate change accelerates, Namibia's unique plant biodiversity could also become increasingly variable in international market if cultivated and managed wisely. Now, to move on to the next item is that the United Nations Population Fund began the 3-day induction of its youth advisory panel yesterday. Now, bringing together youth presentations across Namibia to amplify youth voices in national development. Now, the induction said to rather took place starts yesterday, that is on the 20th, and to end on the 22nd May 2025. Now, it meant to empower youth people to agent of change in their communities and the national at large. Now, the panel will focus on key issues affecting Namibians' youth, including sexual, the reproductive health care access, gender equality, family planning, the prevention of gender-based violence, and the elimination of harmful practices such as the child marriage and female genital mutilation. Now, on this, my colleague Nirunanye Michael Petrus spoke with one of the Member of Parliament and former Executive Chairperson of the NANSO to further unpack her expectation of the initiative and how it also serves as a platform to bring forward unheard voices and, of course, ensure youth ensure youth that are part of decision making in the country. We might take a listen to their particular discussion.
This is Nilinanya Michael Pietrus reporting for Eagle FM. Together here with us, we have Sharonese Bush. We would like to ask you some questions, Ms. Sharonese.
Yes, good day to the listeners out there. As introduced, I am Sharonese Bush. I am a member of the National Assembly of the 8th Parliament of the Republic of Namibia, but also previously served as the Executive Chairperson of Namibia's National Youth Council, and I'm delighted to be talking to you.
How involved are you going to be throughout the timeline of this initiative, and what would you like to see come out of it by the end?
I place a lot of emphasis on the importance of this initiative because I am a beneficiary of youth leadership and investments made into young people, and I understand the value that it adds to the life of a young person in ensuring that young people become productive citizens and positive actors in society. So the expectation that I have of this program in particular is to ensure that young people are not just used in a tokenistic approach or manner to ensure that we tick off the box to say that, yes, we have brought young people to the table, but it's actually to equip these young leaders that you have brought across the country and to equip them with the important and necessary relevant information. One, to give them training to understand, you know, how governance works, to understand how the UN as a multilateral organization interacts and interfaces with Namibia, but for them to understand how this program actually positions young people to now meaningfully contribute to policies. What are policies? Policies are instruments that government sets for the day insofar as meeting its social contract with the people. So when we are speaking of youth development, us as young people know the issues that affect us. At the heart of it is youth unemployment. So what do these youth representatives that are now part of this program, what do they have to say insofar as bringing solutions to the table? We have poverty that still keeps young people away from reaching their full potential and full development as young individuals, individually and collectively. What do these young leaders bring to the table insofar as ensuring how do we arrest poverty, how do we arrest youth unemployment at a very grassroots level? And we are speaking of a grassroots level, we are speaking of the young people that do not have the privilege, that do not have the access necessarily to be a part of this program, but also that that necessarily do not have the voice to speak for themselves here. So there's that the responsibility to ensure that these voices that were selected to be a part of this program, of the YAP program, really come and contribute meaningfully, and is also very representative and inclusive of the constituency that they represent, which is the youth of Namibia. As we know, Namibia is a youthful population. Over a majority of the 3 million that the recent census have informed us of is below the ages of 35. So now more than ever, us as young people, we should drive change because we will inherit this country, and therefore any decision that is made now should not be done without us, and we should give input to it because we'll be the ones to lead Namibia in the distant future, but also we will be the ones that will inherit the consequences of decisions that are made today. So therefore this program is not only participating, which I really appreciate and value, but I would want to encourage the youth to ensure that they are really representative and they honestly reflect on the shared realities of what young people go through across our 14 regions and 121 constituencies.
Thank you so much, Ms.
All right, there you have it. My colleague again spoke to another person, Loide Mukongo, just spoke about how this project also how the project goes beyond the war, striving to create a real capacity and how important it is to the youth. We might take a lesson to their discussion.
Ms. Loide, what prompted the decision to create this project and how did the decision to involve the youth come about?
Thank you for that question. The United Nations Population Fund has always been serving adolescent and young people across many countries on the globe, and specifically for Namibia since independence. More recently, given the cohort of young people in country, according to the recent census, talking about 71.1% of the country's young people under the age of 35, it became more imperative that we engage young people more meaningfully, including ensuring that they are part of the decision-making processes. So as a result, we felt that, and learning from other countries, we felt that it's important that UNFPA, now implementing the new country program, which is now the seventh country program since independence, ensure that there is an advisory, youth advisory panel on board that is constantly informing UNFPA of youth issues and how those youth issues need to be addressed, therefore involving them in decision-making processes.
Thank you so much for that. Could you elaborate on the vision of this initiative for the next 5 years, and what are the major targets of this?
Thank you. The vision really for the next 5 years, in line with the United Nations Population Fund strategic objective, we are currently implementing, as I said, the seventh country program, which is anchored in the strategic plan, global strategic plan of UNFPA, but also anchored in the national development priorities of Namibia, is to ensure that we contribute to the development agenda in terms of ending unmet need for family planning, ending gender-based violence and other harmful practices, but also ensuring that we contribute to ending preventable maternal death in the country. So if when you look at those three transformative results that I just highlighted, the cohort that is affected mostly is the young people. You know, in Namibia, for example, we have high teenage pregnancy in country. Yeah. We have high number of gender-based violence, but also involving adolescent and young people, even the age of 15 to 19, but also 20 to 25 when you look at those data. So the data really showed us that it's vital that we engage young people more meaningfully, but allowing them really to be the implementers, the advisors, the advisory board in the case, but also really the people that will guide us on the processes so that we can co-create solutions for the young people together, is the mantra of young people always refer to, nothing for them without them. So we feel that it's important that we engage them.
We love the initiative that the UNFPA has taken on. And lastly, what regions will this initiative focus on, and why specifically these regions?
Well, the initiative is broadly at national level, covering all regions. That's why we have representatives of the Youth Advisory Panel, YAP, from all 14 regions of Namibia. But there's a specific focus on the 6 regions that are UNFPA focus regions for the 7th country programs. These are the regions of Umahake, Kunene, Ohangwena, Kavango West, and Kavango East, which other regions have, and Zambezi. So these regions are the one that will zoom in when it comes to critical interventions, aiming at ensuring that young people's potentials are fulfilled, particularly looking at the aspect of gender equality and sexual and reproductive health. But as I indicated earlier, all the regions are covered, and we expect all the youth advisory panel members to really guide the implementers. As I indicated, we are a development agency. We implement with the government of Namibia, and Namibia national government NGOs, basically, and also civil society organization, non-governmental organization, and also civil society organizations. So we expect these panel advisory panel members to really work with those institutions and guide UNFPA to indicate that, well, I know you are partnering with the Ministry of Health, for example, in these particular regions, and these are some of the issues that we as young people would love to have addressed. So can you kindly focus on ABC instead of focusing on ABC? We know, for example, with advanced technology, the young people nowadays want us to communicate to them in a different way. So we remain open to advices, and so that we can engage and involve more young people, as I said earlier, meaningfully, but more really as advisors and people at the forefront of the implementation of their own interventions, so that we can also take a back seat.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lloyd. It's been great speaking to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, there you have it. The next item is at the Costa Ondangwa and SOS Student Village. Ondangwa have signed a memorandum of understanding to support the youth. Now, Esther Kaluhoni, the center manager of COSTEC Ondangwa, highlighted the organization's role and reasons behind the partnership with the SOS Children's Village. We might take a listen.
COSTEC Ondangwa is a technical vocational institute that aims to provide skills training to the out-of-school youth and other community members. The main objective is to equip them with the necessary knowledge,
that can help them to become employable, self-reliant, and be able to study further to enhance their career. This year, FOSDE Kondangwa has enrolled 271 trainees, out of which three are identified as vulnerable, and this prompted SOS Kondangwa to contribute in the form of monetary gesture towards their tuition fees. We thank SOS very much. So this forms part of why we are signing off a very important document of collaboration today. Today marks an important step in strengthening our support for young people. Through this partnership, we aim to equip our youth with the skills and resources as well as opportunities they need to blossom. Our collaboration is built on a shared vision, to uplift, educate, and empower the youth through extending youth employability initiatives that will benefit both SOAS and FOSDE Kondangwa. Through today, we are committing to providing possible assistance to young entrepreneurs with variable business ideas. We are also committing to offering training and development in terms of entrepreneurship workshops, business proposal development, and job readiness programs. We are ensuring to engage the youth in the development of activities with the aim to enhance leadership and personal growth. Today, we are making sure we will be giving monitoring and support beyond the program by assisting the vulnerable trainees with school needs and internship placement. Through these initiatives, ladies and gentlemen, we are investing not only in skills, but in future endeavors of our youth. Every young person deserves the chance to build a career and a life they are proud of. Ladies and gentlemen, what we are initiating today is more than an agreement. It is a commitment to stand beside our youth, to guide them, and to ensure they have the tools they need to succeed. I therefore invite each of us to be an active part of this mission, whether as mentors, supporters, or advocates for the change we seek. Finally, allow me to extend my deepest thanks to everyone who has made this possible. Let us.
All right, there you had it. Also on the very same session is that Julieta Furella, national director of SOS Children's Village, highlighted their mandate, stating that their mission is to build families for children, support their ability to shape their own futures, and of course facilitate their engagement with the community. We might take a listen to this discussion.
At SOS, our mission is to build families for children. We help them shape their own futures, and we also participate in the development of their communities. For that reason, our programs have different areas. We do not only concentrate on child care and protection, not only our villages, but we have different key services that we provide. First of all, we have the villages that we are known for, where we provide care for children that have lost parental care, or those that are, we also provide assistance to children that are at risk of losing parental care. Now, we do not only limit ourselves to the services that we provide to children, but to make sure that, because our aim is to ensure that when children leave our care, or the care of any caregiver, whether in SOS, other residential child care facility, or in the community, they become self-reliant and contributing members of our societies. Therefore, that's why youth development also plays a key role in the programs that we are implementing at SOS Children's Villages Namibia. In terms of youth development, at SOS,
It was good to have an engagement earlier on with Mr. Kapia. For us at SOS, we also believe in the talent of each and every individual child. You find children that are academically gifted, and then you find those that are not so academically gifted, but have other talents. That's where now we nurture those talents as well. Now we are expanding, not only within our own children, but look at the community at large to say, if these children are not academically gifted, what are their talents? What are those talents that we can assist them in developing them so that they also, like those that are academically gifted, they also become self-reliant adults and contributing members of the society? That's where institutions like COSTEC come in, or the Federation itself is COSTEC. This is going to be a very not only important partnership that will really contribute to us attaining our objectives as an organization, those of COSTEC, Oceania region, but the country at large, with so many numbers, with high numbers of unemployment. This will really assist us in reducing the unemployment rates, even if our young people don't become formally employed, but they'll be able to learn skills for them to be able to earn their own income. So as part of our youth development program, besides the support that we provide to young people to make sure that they enroll for technical skills or any other educational qualifications, one of the challenges that we've seen in the country is that sometimes our young people can get the qualifications, can have the qualifications that they need, but maybe they are still not employable. We look at other areas that the young people need to be developed in, like soft skills, let's say CV writing skills, mock interview trainings, and so on. Those are areas also that we concentrate on, and these are areas that we can further collaborate with SOS Children's Villages to ensure that even if they complete their skills at COSTEC, after that they also gain those soft skills that will put them at a better position to compete with other young people in the community. So this is not the end. It's a starting point with our partnership that will move to greater heights. It's really an honor for us to be here and to collaborate with such an institution as COSTEC, and we look forward to more partners coming in. One of our main priorities also establishing partnerships, because alone we cannot do so much. But if we work together with different institutions, key institutions like COSTEC, we are able to provide the support that our young people need to ensure that they become self-reliant.
All right, there you had it. The time is 56 minutes in the after clock. This early morning skip. Now to move on to the next item is that the report by the National Council Standing Committee on Education, Science and ICT and Youth Development has revealed that 60 out of 121 proposals under the constituency Youth Enterprise Initiative are ready for financing. Now, the committee shared its findings following engagement with the now dismantled Ministry of Sport, Youth and National Services. Now, the constituency Youth Enterprise Initiative is a government program aimed at fostering youth entrepreneurship and driving economic development across all 121 constituency in the country. Now, the initiative is being implemented by the Natuli Kwafele Kwafela Initiative, and it's designed to support young entrepreneurs through financial assistance, training, and business development opportunities. Now, each enterprise is intended to comprise 5 to 10 youth people from their respective constituency, with a focus on sectors such as agriculture, manufacturing, and services. Now, to support the success of the initiative, the Ministry of Sport, Youth and National Services, together with the Development Bank of Namibia, DBN, and the University of Namibia, provided training to over 484 young individuals. Now, the training focused on a key business management skills, including how to develop a bankable business plan. Now, according to the committee, as of the oversight vested, approximately 60 of the submitted business plans were deemed ready for financing, with the remaining plans expected to be finalized shortly. Now, the report also indicates that DBN provided $1 million for training phase and committed an additional $8 million in soft loans to fund about 28 youth entrepreneurs across the country's 14 regions. Now, the initiative aims to create approximately 1,210 direct permanent jobs with further employment opportunities expected as a funded business grow. Now, a tripartite agreement was signed between the former Minister of Youth, the Development Bank of Namibia, and the NATU Aliqua Fela initiative to operationalize the RON for the 28 youth-led rural enterprises forming part of the broader 121 constituency program. Now, ultimately, the initiative seeks to deliver financial support and socio-economic opportunity to entrepreneurs, particularly in rural areas. And to move on to the next item, sorry, we can go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, I will take you through the next item. Do not go away.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekiro kaguna imatina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana alongeshefa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongoti samweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito ma iyoe yongeshefa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomoe programa detu. Moambo lengira selma kodara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.4.
Right, welcome back. This is a paid advert or a live read. Now, this May, it's time to celebrate excellence, achievement, and the future. Now, the International University of the Management will proudly host its 2025 Winter Convocation ceremony taking place over the two exciting days. That is Thursday, that is tomorrow, Thursday on the 2022, and Friday, that is the 23rd May 2025, now at the elegant Window Country Club Resort. Now, with two graduation sessions each day, we are honoring the hard work and dedication of our incredible graduates. Now can't make it in person, no problem. Join us from anywhere. All four sessions will be live streamed on the LUM Facebook page. Now, Thursday, the 22 May, that is tomorrow, the graduation ceremony will be live on Eagle FM from 8 a.m. Now, join us in celebrating the future of Namibia, because at LUM, we are advising knowledge and training leaders. Save the dates and tune in.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event.
Right, the time is 3 minutes in the off 7 o'clock, this early morning scoop. And to move on to the next item is that my colleague Azafia Basun spoke to economist and farmer Dobset Kwala, who addressed the post-harvest difficulties encountered by the small-scale farmers in the country. We might take a lesson.
Good morning, Mr. Kuala. How are you doing?
Good morning, Em. And good morning, listeners.
With many Namibian small-scale farmers expecting a bumper harvest this year, concerns are raising over post-harvest losses due to poor storage and limited market access. Mr. Kuala, how does limited access to market or well-established link to markets for subsistence farming affect their livelihood and income-generating ability?
What a wonderful morning to start the day with, considering the production in the farming area. The first question I would say, outline four stuff that will affect the farmers. The first thing that farmer will be affected with in terms of limited market, it's going to be wastage of products. Demoralize the focus to produce, stress, and poor income generation. All this will lead to, due to the fact that there will be poor market access that will be in place. But from my side, it won't really be an issue, as there should be a value addition, you know, mechanism. There are already training that are already, you know, offered to farmers on various platforms, either Facebook, WhatsApp, even through governance, where people are taught how to add value or preserve the farm produce, depending on the type of crops or horticulture produce, whether they are dry or they are fresh. That's what can determine the lack of market accessibility. And the second one, again, from the first point where I raised the types of consequences or costs that I will be involved, is that in the markets of horticulture produce, all crops from agriculture, there is a data collection that sticks to the guidance of farmers in terms of what to produce and when to harvest or when to expect it. So in the setup of the Namibia system in agriculture by NNFU, they are teaching how to farm, you know, under dry land, which is through rain fed, and there is also something to do under irrigation. So on horticulture also, there is a statistics that is used to determine what to provide in the market and what will be available for production or for sale within a certain season. So this is additional to what is prepared when we are assuming that maybe we won't have a market due to bumper harvest. Because for me, when there's a surplus in a season, it is good for agriculture, so that it limits us from importing. So now the advantage that we are going to have is that we are not going to import the mostly produced, you know, products. And you know, we have to know or find out, like, what are those products that are highly, which volume is so high that they won't get the market. Because Namibia suffered this a strong and persistence of drought in the past, we can say in the past 5 years. It's only this year, toward the end of 2024, when we have a very high rainfall and long rainfall, you know, season. This is what resulted in this type of, bumper harvest.
Okay. Given the bumper harvest, do you think it was ideal for the government, especially local government and the Ministry of Agriculture, to link these farmers to the market?
Yes. It is necessary because we have controlled products, maize, mahangu, or we can classify them grains. In Namibia, they are regulated. And that's where we get more of the mill oil, the sorghum mill oil, you know, mahangu mill, that we use for our daily food. And it's our staple food. So when we are talking about modern agriculture, we have to stick to records, you know, record keeping, to make sure that we are keeping records of our marketing calendar, production calendar, harvesting calendar. We also, you know, keep in touch with the media to get updates on economics, on what is happening in the country. We cannot say it's not necessary for government to do so. That one, it won't be well, because the government created a Ministry of Agriculture to serve that purpose. And government also, in the same vein, has established a platform of communication, like the TV, the newspaper, radio stations, magazines, and many other platforms to enable information to reach the public. So it is necessary for government to keep in touch with the community or with the citizens so that they get updates. And with our private sector, in terms of media houses, the newspaper, they should exercise their mandate to communicate or disseminate information to the interview, like as we are doing now. So government should not get tired, and it's their mandate. And I remember through NAB, they provide a lot of information regarding the market's availability, even the tonnage, you know, prices, you know, which you can expect when you sell a certain ton or volume of your harvest that you have. So that is on this question, that is what I can say. But despite that, you'll find that if we have persistence of drought, we need to understand that our reserve, where we do storage, should be able to keep how much grains in order to assist with food supply to the vulnerable communities. Now, in this case, though food is having a certain length into the storage facility, because we also have pests, especially if we have storage facilities which are not well treated against pests. So these pests are the ones that can reduce the lifespan of the grains, because sometimes you'll find like others, they can just be 6 months. Then beyond 6 months, you have different types of pests that have infested the silos, the shed, or somewhere where you are keeping or store your harvest. Now, in case of fresh produce, these are difficult for storage if you don't have cool storage. And this is where we talk about which type of crops, all horticulture produce, should we have on the market and survive the shelf life that is lengthy. And this is where we look at the time of harvesting, so that the ripening process can take place during the storage time or during transportation. And this has been practiced for many years in the agriculture when it comes to value chain and logistics, in order for, you know, to avoid the spoilage of the product. Now, in case of crops like all produces like onion, they are dried and sold for a longer time, so their shelf life is longer than 6 months. Things like carrot, they cannot last for a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more you keep them again in the cool storage, they'll start sprouting. And this is an exercise where if it's outside a cool room, they can start sprouting. Even it happens to potatoes. So there are mechanisms in place in terms of value addition, so that we can start processing frozen food in terms of fresh produce. This applies in foods like cabbages, onions, carrots, green beans. We talk about potatoes, chili, a number of them that you can mix together and frozen them and start to be selling them as such. So this is another clarity that I wanted to speak about, just to supplement on the information that government should not withhold. You know, all should not, you know, give up in terms of giving information to the public.
Mm-hmm. Finally, you've mentioned a few, but most of the subsistence farming have limited storage to their mahangu and beans. This affects their ability to store food till the next harvest. And you've mentioned a few, but how can the country, especially OPM and the Ministry of Agriculture, assist in this case as a countermeasure for food insecurity?
I think the revision of procurement through the OPM, you know, policy should be revised and first give priority to farmers in the Republic of Namibia. As long as you are a farmer, your food will be procured by the Office of the Prime Minister Disaster and Risk Management, unit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they should help. If there was an error in the drafting of the policy, because it seems like the policy gives opportunity to any reputable, company that is able to sustain the market or to be able to supply the volume that is required. I'll give an example of the previous tender by the OPM towards the end of last year that was given to one company in Zambezi, whereby they were subjected to buy meal. Now, if you look at such a volume, if it returns today, those communal farmers that are now trying to say they will lack the market, that is a direct market. Because 20,000, it's enough to sustain a number of farmers on the communal status or level. Therefore, we can still urge government to liaise with the Ministry of Agriculture from the Office of the OPM and get this information that we are subjected to a bumper harvest, therefore limited markets is already observed. Now they should start preparing. The good thing is that food is not lasting, item. It's a consumable commodity on daily basis. And based on the value addition that we have, we can end up even use the crops that are harvested of the grains, the beans, the millet, into different types of products. The mahango, we know already, we always make flour and we make the meal from it. The maize, all the maize grain, it's already known. It's animal feed and it's also used for maize meal. The beans also, they are highly consumed and they are highly used as aid during disasters because of their high protein value and energy supplements or minerals that can help people to maintain their daily life once they've consumed it. So mm-hmm. beans will automatically have the market. That one I can guarantee you. It will definitely have the market. On the mahangu is already a branded commodity of Namibia. Must pay attention to it. In as much as maize is also brand, that it's highly consumed and it's already having its market, that's how mahangu is. Mahangu, during the time of the late founding father, Dr. Sam Nujoma, that's when he is a founder who has made sure that mahangu should be on the market like any other products which are formalized. It should not be found like as if it's just a product that you produce from home and it's just consumed within. And you make your local mahel or your local beers or stuff. No. Mahangu today, even in India, across the globe, because some of the mahangu, that we always import is coming from, India. They are already processing flour that is used to make bread. So which means through value addition, we can, do something with the mahangu. Now I was just clarifying on these three major staple food or agricultural produces that you have mentioned.
Right, there you have it. The Kwara just pointed out the critical role of educating farmers on post-harvest management and, of course, preserving a method to prolong shelf life
shelf life, and minimize losses, ultimately enhancing food security and, of course, improving the livelihood of families. Now, furthermore, my colleague Sharon Seaman spoke to a farmer, Hausiko Johannes, about the post-harvest difficulties encountered by the small-scale farmers in the country. We might take a lesson.
Okay, thank you very much for having me for this opportunity just to share my opinions and my experience regarding to water storage, or we can put in a context into how can we harvest water.
Okay. So, Jonas Haufiku, you are the farmer. So, what have you done to preserve rainwater, which is for future utilization?
Yeah. So far, what we did, especially in our region where I'm speaking in the northern region. For the Kavango, I'm based in Kavango West. Actually, what we did, we advocate the government just to come up with SDM. It's how we preserve water. So far in the inland, we are having various SDM that is store water. Such as you can find the SDM at Nekara, you can find the SDM at there's various Kampupu, at Kampupu village, and also Runda. Yeah, those are the villages that are having SDM so far, and Gala.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are four villages that are having SDM so far, and that SDM is full of water, even when we are speaking now.
Mm-hmm. So, how we all know that this year was a year of rainfall, as we all know that we really received too much rainfall in 2025. So what are the new technical ways for preserving rainwater for a long-term usage?
Yeah, actually this is still ongoing negotiation between the farmers and the government of the Republic of Namibia, mostly the Ministry of Agriculture that was assigned to provide water to the community or to the farmers. What we are really engaged, like this year, even our perennial rivers, Kavango, it's full flooded up to the far bank there. If maybe the government by now come up with a canal that can pump water 100 or 200 deep there in the inland, then probably this year we could, even during this time which we are heading now, we can even have irrigation.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. Okay, Johannes, like as we are speaking now, so what do you think, or how do you convince other farmers, or how do you convince other people to save water, or other farmers, or what are the best help preserve the water supply?
Yeah, actually, how can we preserve our water? Actually, there is a new technique for drip irrigation that actually can preserve water wastage.
Mm-hmm.
That program, if we can use it, then we can have enough food because we are going to water throughout this winter season.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Namibian farmers at the north have been talking about community projects such as upgrading dams, what we call Omatale in Oshubambo, so for enhancing the capacity of water. Have these plans have been implemented in any region, or what do you think about this?
Yeah, yes, that one is what I was alluded earlier. The government have already implemented, but even though it's not really adequate, or I can say enough, but so far we have in Kavango West, we have four SDM that was constructed by the government, and other ones were by a donor fund. So far, these SDM is having water.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Matale we do have, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And including this natural water pans, the one is used to store water. Also, we do have.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, that's the perennial revive.
Oh, that's the one you have.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, thank you so much, Jonas Haufiku, and thank you for joining us, and oh, thank you for taking part in these or giving us more ideas on how to preserve water, especially during these winter season, as we all know that winter season has approached. So I hope everyone gonna take all of the ideas that you said here, especially about on how to preserve water, and I would like to say have a blessed day ahead.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekiro kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafata na nana longeshe fa ya ishiwike moshi wana. Iye moya wo ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anageshe fa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakuro ni randito mwa iwe yongeshe fa yoye kupipira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo lengera selma onara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o ambiyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, so welcome back. The time is 25 minutes in the afternoon o'clock. We still have 5 minutes to go. Over to hand over to my colleague, Tate Michael Chauvet. But moving on our last update of the day is that the Arundu Town Council has proposed a capital project budget of 284.1 million Namibian dollars for the 2025 to 2026 financial year, marking a 15% increase from the previous year's budget of 245 million Namibian dollars. Now, this was announced during a recent meeting between the council representatives and the residents held in Kavango East region. Now, the council's executive for finance, Sam Nekaro explained that the increase reflects a continued commitment to infrastructure development and strategic investment in the key capital initiatives. Now, one of the major projects outlined includes the construction of a new council head office budgeted at 28 million Namibian dollars. Now, Nekaro emphasized that the current council building is in a severely dilapidated state, posing a safety risk to employees. Now, we are still operating from government-owned offices, some of the oldest building in town, situated on the land belonging to the Ministry of Works. We cannot continue to rent land that we already own. Now, this year, we have taken it upon ourselves to begin building a new structure with a strong foundation. That's what Nekaro said. Now, the council's plan is, however, met with discontent from some residents, especially on the increased tariffs, particularly those affecting informal traders. Now, Maria Ndango, a street vendor, voiced her frustration about the tariffs. The money the council is asking us to pay, we're not even making that much when we sell our veggies. Now, it will be difficult to cope with a 10% increase. Now, the council should consider raising it to just 5% for now. That what Maria said. Now, in response, the mayor, Gabriel Kanyanga, announced the council's plan to establish the dedicated meat market for street vendors. Now, this space will be for those meat sellers currently operating under trees along the roads, and they will have also a proper facility to store and sell the products, that's what Kanyanga said. Now, another issue that the pact had to debate was the growing waste problem in Rundu. Several residents criticized the unsanitary state for the town, particularly along Maria Mwengele Road. Now, on that, Tino Wakudu, a concerned resident, also remarked, how can we attract tourists if the town is dirty and trash is everywhere? Now, every street corner is becoming a dumping site, that's what he said. Now, responding to those concerns, Francisca Campembona, strategic executive for community services, said the council is working in collaboration with the police and the Namibian Revenue Agency, Customs and Excess Diversion to carry out a joint operation inspecting businesses and assessing the safety and compliance standards. Now, he also revealed that many businesses in Rundu are operating illegally, lacking proper health standards and documentation. Now, so far, we have closed down several businesses operating without fitness certificates and displaying only a business registration of certificate. That's what she said. And lastly, the council has promised to continue its effort to improve infrastructure, enhance service delivery, and regulate informal and formal economic activities in the town. And that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in today's edition. That is Early Morning Scoop. And we will be, hand over to my colleague, Dr. Michael Shafiru, to take you through the unpacking of the day as usual. Thank you so much for tuning in and enjoy the rest of the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana longeshefa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongoti samweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe yongeshefa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo lengira selma konaraje takimu. Datundatu heari jamano tano o ambiyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%,
point is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.